thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
There we go. At 109, this is John. I was putting together the show today thinking, oh, that's interesting. There's an interesting story. Hey, that's in the news. Let's talk about that. It's topics I'm interested in. I think you will be too, and it dawned on me. A lot of this stuff is tough. It's either serious news or shocking and sometimes depressing news. Fortunately, we close today with the bright side. You'll call in, give us some good news in your world, why you are smiling. That's the bright side. We do it on Fridays. It works every single time. If you're in a good mood, you'll love it. And if you're just, whatever, I got stuff to do, wait till you hear the bright side. We'll do that at about 2:40. We'll ask you to tell us something happy in your world. And as we all listen to and share those big and small smiles, you find yourself feeling good going into your Friday afternoon. That's our bright side. Hey, listen, Teddy Roosevelt's still available. You can still get a ticket. How about that? All I need you to do is, yes, go to WGNradio.com/events, and you can hear, and you'll get all the details you need. But the show's going to be Saturday, August 12th at the College of DuPage. We'll do a morning show and an early afternoon show. Teddy Roosevelt was the 26th President of the United States. He was an exceptional person. He would describe himself this way.
The youngest president ever in the history of this country. 42, and I left office at 50, the youngest former president.
Author of 35 books?
At least 35. Depending on how you count, I wrote more than 35 books, several of them American classics. And let me just say, the next writingest president of American history, who would that be? John Quincy Adams. He wrote 12 books, all unreadable.
You were a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
We settled the Russo-Japanese War. And because of that, I became the first American to win the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm often seen as a warmonger. And by the way, I do like war. But I was a man of peace as president. I was the first president to win the Nobel Peace Prize. I was the first president to leave this country during his time as president. I went to see my canal in Panama. I was the first president.
Excuse me, your canal?
Yeah, right. Then he went on to describe how you would still be digging it in your time if it wasn't for me, or something like that. You know, really, there are times where he's chatty and humorous that way, self-aggrandizing, and other times self-deprecating. But when the war came, it wasn't while he was president, but he insisted that his sons all serve. And he insisted that they don't take some back office job in the war, but that they go to the front. And his son was shot down and killed. He was one of the first aerialists. He was in an early World War I duel in the skies. And when the word got back to him, he then had to tell his wife, who maybe didn't love the fact that her husband said to their sons, "You will fight in the war and you will be on the trigger." And when he tells that story, it breaks your heart. He's gotten choked up retelling it to us before himself. It's funny because when you talk to President Roosevelt or President Jefferson on stage and they tell you first person what their lives were like, how they lost children at a rate that would alarm us today, and that was life for them, especially Jefferson. I mean, if you lived to be 60, you almost certainly were going to outlive most of your kids. It's amazing. We take for granted so many things in this country these days. Our freedom, and for that matter, our health, among other things. So TR and I are on stage August 12th. Do you have your tickets yet? Go to WGNradio.com/events or call, I don't see the number, but I'll get you the number in a second. And it's at WGNradio.com/events. Make sure that you get tickets to that. Before we go any further, though, I think we should just do this. Here's the tweet from the president that the whole world is paying attention to today. It's kind of bizarre. I am being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, Witch Hunt. At first, that thing didn't, I don't know, shock me that much. But boy, everybody sure did latch onto that because they see this is an admission now that Trump is under investigation. The Washington Post has been reporting that, but here the president himself is saying, I am being investigated. It's funny because I wonder on what authority he has that. Does Robert Mueller tell him he's under investigation? Does somebody say, by the way, or is that just his inference because of the fact that he reads the same newspapers the rest of us read? How does the president know he's being investigated for firing the FBI director? In fact, I thought we already knew that. I thought that horse was out of the barn. But for some reason today, that's big news. Either that he is, in fact, or that the president is himself admitting it.
Well, I mean, until now, the president may well have said all of the reports that he was under investigation were fake news. You know, I mean, he's discounted a lot of stories as saying they're fake news, and there's not been an official confirmation anywhere. This isn't an official confirmation, but it comes from him.
Yeah, this is or is not an official confirmation.
Well, it would only be official, I think, from Robert Mueller, but,
right.
I mean, it's pretty darn close. You know, if the guy who's being investigated says I'm being investigated, I think that's pretty reliable.
Well, I don't know that that's the case. Under normal circumstances, it would be. But he's so super defensive. If you look at him cross-eyed, he's got to, you know, blow you up on Twitter. So I just wonder if that's him reacting to what appears to be the investigation of him per se, but may not be. Maybe I'm quibbling too much here. He says, I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director, that'd be Comey, by the man who told me to fire the FBI director. Witch hunt! That's funny, too, because the man that's doing the investigation now is Robert Mueller.
Yeah, but his boss is Rod Rosenstein.
Okay, because that's the man who told me to... And by the way, so the ping pong ball is now back in Rosenstein's court?
It is for this tweet.
I mean, there's just you've really got to, as they like to say on CNN sometimes, unpack this one. I'm being investigated. News for firing the FBI director, Comey, by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, which presumably is Rosenstein. But I thought the last version of this was that was Trump's decision.
Well,
nobody told him to do it.
He only has so many characters in a tweet. The next sentence would have been, after I told him to tell me to fire him.
Right.
So that's kind of...
Again, maybe that's not quibble worthy, but if you're wondering who's responsible, and I think this is an interesting and fair question for us all, who's responsible for Comey's dismissal? Was it the president or was he acting on advice of counsel? This puts it back in Rosenstein's court, who isn't, for most of us, the guy that's investigating the president. That's Mueller, but Mueller works for Rosenstein. Interestingly, I think...
Okay, look at it this way, John, a different way. So say you're being investigated by the first assistant district state's attorney here in Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay, but Kim Fox is the boss of that first assistant state's attorney, so you could say Kim Fox is investigating you.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
what
fair.
This is. Rosenstein hired Mueller. Mueller, in essence, works for Rosenstein. Rosenstein's leading the investigation.
It sort of reminds me, when you put it that way, Steve, of the fact that you fire Comey, but that doesn't change the fact that other people are doing the investigation, right? So Comey might have been a guy who was investigating Donald Trump, but, and you can fire him or you can keep him, but the investigation will continue unabated. Is that true?
Right, sure. It fueled it.
Witch hunt. By the way, the president keeps reminding us this is the greatest witch hunt in American history. And somebody said, no, the greatest witch hunt in American history was the Salem witch hunt. That was the greatest witch hunt in American history. We actually hunted for witches and we killed the people, the women that we thought were. That was a terrible witch hunt. That was a terrible witch hunt. The president said, despite the phony witch hunt going on, and by the way, as I'm reading this, I'm just watching the numbers scroll over like at a gas station of likes and retweets. Who are these people? Despite the phony witch hunt going on in America, the economic and jobs numbers are great. Regulations way down, jobs and enthusiasm way up. And before that, he tweeted, the fake news media hates when I use what has turned out to be my very powerful social media. Over 100 million people, exclamation point. I can go around them. Yeah, but you can't go around Robert Mueller. So at least that's the status of that tweet. Incidentally, about his use of social media, Wired magazine at wired.com has a story today about the people and groups that the president has blocked on Twitter. So as he is communicating to the world, there are some people who he has now specifically blocked, and you get a notification if he has. These are people then that are not receiving his messages. He singled them out, presumably because he's so angry at something they've said or done. They include novelist Stephen King, Marina Sirtis, or Sirtis. Sirtis is not the name, it's Sirtis. She's a star from the movie Star Trek. Bess Kalb, who is a writer on Jimmy Kimmel. A.J. Joshi, who is an entrepreneur. Holly O'Reilly, who is a songwriter. Joe Papp, who is a professional cyclist. The list includes rocket scientists, organizers, and journalists, all who have said or tweeted mean things about the president, and so now they do not get his messages. They have been blocked. I see that the Mueller investigation has hired or is about to 13 new lawyers, and that they're going to add even more to the investigation. People who have worked on everything from Watergate to Enron investigations. Not just another house full of attorneys, but guys who are and gals specialists in this sort of digging and interviewing and document searching. Mike Pence, I understand, has acquired a private attorney. I don't think it's reasonable to read too much into that. That just seems prudent.
It would be a story if he didn't.
Yeah. Despite the fact that Trump took a shot at Rosenstein on Twitter, Rosenstein issued a 66-word statement last night advising us all to use caution on news reports of the investigation that cite anonymous sources in its entirety. And kind of out of the blue, Rosenstein last night said this: Americans should exercise caution before accepting as true any stories attributed to anonymous officials, particularly when they do not identify the country, let alone the branch or agency of government with which the alleged sources supposedly are affiliated. Americans should be skeptical about anonymous allegations. The Department of Justice has a longstanding policy to neither confirm nor deny such allegations. And that was that. Now, what was that all about? I mean, duh, but what's he trying to do there? That's not necessarily bad advice, but it does seem to sort of support the president's use of the phrase fake media, or for that matter, the skepticism he wants us all to have about sources that are negative to him. Those are the anonymous sources. I wish that the anonymous sources wouldn't be anonymous too, but just because they are doesn't keep me from believing most of what they say. I've noticed that in the New York Times at times now, they do cite, maybe they've always done this, but at least I'm now noticing it, the number of people they got. So in a story today, for instance, they say 5 unnamed sources, not just unnamed sources, but how many people within the administration or the intelligence departments are telling them the same story, and none of them have been authorized to speak publicly about it. Maybe they shouldn't be speaking at all about it. But they are, and that they're anonymous does not, in my mind, necessarily make what they're saying not true. What else is going on? And then, kind of also out of the blue, the president has said that the Dreamers get to stay. Steve, I didn't even know that was on anybody's list of things to do.
It's a big story. The president's in Miami today talking about rolling back some of the opening that the Obama administration did to Cuba. But yesterday, in announcing that they were going to stop an Obama program. I don't remember specifically what it was. It was never instituted. The last sentence or two, they essentially said, and we're not going to repeal DACA, or DACA stays in. These are the kids who were brought into the U.S. as very young kids by their parents. Dreamers, I think they're called by a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it was a very emotional situation where these people thought they might be sent back or sent to the countries of their parents. And apparently the Trump administration has decided against that. He sort of rhetorically had indicated, you know, months ago that the kid, that they would be safe, would be okay. But just the announcement that it's official was made very quietly yesterday.
One other tweet from the president. Crooked Hillary, or Crooked H, as he calls her, because he's limited by the amount of characters he can use. Crooked H destroyed phones with hammer, bleached emails, and had husband meet with AG days before she was cleared. And they talk about obstruction. It's 124. You have something to say about that, I'll take your call. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. Hey, Philip, it's John Williams. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I think you guys are covering most of the topics fairly well. One of the things that I brought to the attention of your producer, and you may or may not be aware of this, is that the author of that Washington Post article was interviewed, and they very clearly stated that this may or may not be true, because whenever you use anonymous sources that do not identify their country or the department that they're calling from, so on and so forth, is can be as false as it could be true. To your point with the four or five people who called the New York Times, it's a known fact that staffers in Washington are your biggest leakers, mm-hmm. and supporters of leaks. They are the ones that do the follow-up calls, and sure, they're all going to have the same story. So I wouldn't believe anonymous anything. If I'm going to say something to you, and I truly believe that it is true, why don't I identify myself?
You know, that's a different – my interpretation of that has often been this. I should bring this up with some of the Tribune reporters. At least I know them. But to me, anonymous sources can also be somebody that I know full well. I'm having a phone or a face-to-face conversation with. I know exactly who they are, but they've asked me to make them anonymous. And my guess is that's the case.
Why don't they state that? Why don't they say?
Well, what's your guess on that, Philip?
Wait a second. I don't think it's ever an anonymous, completely anonymous, like a phone call. When
New York Times, hey, the president's being investigated, but I can't tell you who I am.
If you look at the language, they say sources who are not, you know, who don't want to be identified or who are speaking off the record because they're not authorized to speak. Reporters, if they cite anonymous sources, they're not anonymous to the reporters. They always know who they are, and they have a relationship with them and know them.
But invariably, when they are then asked, the reporters, as to if whether or not they researched the validity of that, nine times out of ten, they say no.
I disagree with that. I think that if you look at a story, especially in these days, they're citing, and you have a point maybe if they're just repeating each other's stories, but they're not just saying one or two, they're saying five or six different sources within, you know, different outfits are corroborating the story.
Well, let's put it this way. They can get it wrong. I'm more willing, if we're talking about CNN, the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal right now, I believe most of the things they're writing and saying. You don't, Philip?
Let me ask you this. If you were keeping a scorecard, are they 90% accurate on the things that they've leaked?
Well, I have no way of knowing, but if you're asking me about my guess.
Yes, you do.
How would I know? I'm reading the same paper you are. I don't know if they're 100% true or 0% true.
How many have come true? I heard you guys.
Which ones haven't come true?
You guys reported on one where a National Guard was being put on alert by President Trump. It was done on a Thursday, and I called in, I spoke to you, and I said, I'll bet you dinner, but by tomorrow, that story's
okay, gone. Well, you answer your own question for me. I'm out of time here, Philip, but I'm going to let you get the last word and answer your own question for me. What percentage of the stories you're reading do you think are true?
I'm going to go with the American public and say, because there's been a poll.
Whatever.
Approximately 30% are true.
I think you're confusing the president's favorability ratings. You're telling me there's a survey out there. I'll look for it. I hope at least you're speaking the truth, because then I can find it. But if you're telling me there's a survey out there and Americans believe only 30% of what they're reading in mainstream media, then I will report that as soon as I can find it. In our studio now is an attorney, Jeff Kroll of Salvi. Is it Shostak and Pritchard? He is a criminal defense attorney, and I just want to kind of walk through this case. Welcome to the show. Nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you, Jen.
Thanks for coming in, Jeff. Have you and I met in person before?
I don't know. I've heard your voice many times.
No, I may have heard yours. You seem familiar to me, although you've never represented me. Am I right about that?
No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. This Michelle Carter case is bizarre. She is an adult now, but she was 17 at the time that she engaged her boyfriend, then a young man named Conrad Roy III. At first, in a series of tweets, I went back and read a lot of them today. She was encouraging him not to commit suicide. He was despondent. He suffered from anxiety and depression. She herself had her own mental health issues. I understand she was anorexic or had some sort of eating disorder.
Correct.
So the two of them find each other, and they text. They describe them as boyfriend-girlfriend in the news stories. I don't know much about their relationship. But here's a text to him from her. It's an exchange, June 19th, 2014, where she urges him to seek medical help. She says, "The mental hospital would help you. I know you don't think it would, but I'm telling you, if you give them a chance, they can save your life. Part of me wants you to try something and fail just so you can get help." He says, "It doesn't help, trust me." She said, "So what are you going to do then? Keep being all talk and no action and every day go through saying how badly you want to kill yourself? Or are you going to try to get better?" He said, "I can't get better. I already made my decision." And again, her first several exchanges with him are along those lines, her being angry or frustrated with him, but really encouraging him to get help. And then at the end, she's saying, "What are you waiting for?"
Yeah. And she did herself no favors by her conduct later on. But early on, I think she was doing everything she could do. She would have never been held accountable for his death at that juncture.
So what's the verb here? Is she responsible, accountable? It's manslaughter.
She was a cause of his death. Now, we live in a society now, think about the cyberbullying, where words can now kill. I see it from my perspective in handling wrongful death cases where words can kill. The cyberbullying's real, and here her words were a cause of his death.
Yeah, okay, I believe that. And I don't have much sympathy for this young lady, but I don't want to get this wrong. And I think it's remarkable because we're all angry at her, we don't like her, these things are hard to read. But think about what we're saying, that by a series of texts, I'm going to put you in jail because he committed suicide.
Yeah, it's sad.
And this over a course of a few months.
Yeah, it's gone from a suicide to a homicide, essentially, just by her conduct in a text instructing him to get back in the vehicle so he can kill himself.
The first text I just read was June 19th, 2014, and the last one is July 12th. So we're talking about a period here of June 19th to July 12th, less than a month.
It is, but you know, all it takes is that one text. And we're
what do you mean all it takes is that one text?
Here, he was a frail young man. He had his issues like you've talked about. He was in a toxic environment, essentially getting out of the car, crying for help. And she said, "Get back in the car." She didn't call the police. She didn't call his family. She was a cause of his death. And I could see where you're saying, you know, you're not rooting for her, so to speak. But this is bad, and it's happening all over our society.
Does it seem as though where at first she wanted to help him, later on she wanted to be the famous grieving girlfriend?
That's exactly what I've seen, and that's the sad part. She got her notoriety, all right. She did, unfortunately.
What do you think an appropriate sentence is in a case like this?
I don't know. I know she can get up to 20 years. Here's an interesting part about this case, John. In Massachusetts, there's no definition for involuntary manslaughter. So the judge will use his interpretation of prior case law. This is a case of first impression in Massachusetts, no doubt. So it's interesting to see because they elected to take a judge versus a jury trial. And it didn't pay off.
What would your advice? I understand that he might have been sympathetic to her. He was a high school principal for years. He dealt with juveniles before. Maybe he could appreciate the anxiety she was going through.
Yeah, I personally like juries. I feel like I have a good rapport with juries. I don't know if a jury would have wanted to put her away for up to 20 years. I don't know. She's a sad individual, and it's scary. I've got kids, and it's scary to see how this cyberbullying, this texting, can go from 0 to 60 in a nanosecond.
You may have a question or comment. 312-981-7200. You can call or text that number. In our studio is Jeff Kroll, criminal defense attorney, Salvi, Shostak, and Pritchard in Chicago. Back in a minute with your calls on WGN. We are talking about the story of Michelle Carter, who was found today guilty of manslaughter. She has not yet been sentenced. She's the young lady who, 3 years ago, convinced, I keep running into verb problems here, persuaded, caused her boyfriend, Conrad Roy III, to commit suicide. She could go to jail for 20 years. We're visiting with Jeff Kroll, an attorney in town. You may have heard him with Bill and Wendy before. What's your guess on sentencing?
It's a case of first impression, so they might be a little lenient on her. I don't see her getting up to the 20 years because this was a troubled man, and he did take his own life. But as I mentioned before, she was a cause of the ultimate decision.
Here's what happened. I mean, we've talked about this. Let me just read two more exchanges. Early in the relationship, this Twitter exchange, their text exchange that we've been following, she was encouraging and then later on encouraging him to kill himself. In this exchange, Carter discourages him, if you will, from harming himself. Carter said, "How do you want to harm yourself?" He said something, "IDK yet." Carter said, "Please don't." He said, "I hate myself. I always hate myself. I'm never going to view myself as good. I'm so far behind." Isn't that a tragic statement? I'm so far behind. The notion is not that I'm depressed, but that I'm so hopelessly behind, I'll never catch up with being a well person. What desperation. And to that, she said, "What is harming yourself going to do? Nothing. It will make it worse." And he said, "It will make the pain go away." But later in the relationship, so that's how you might hope that she would respond. But here's their final exchange. Carter says, "So I guess you aren't going to do it then. All that for nothing. I'm just confused, like you were so ready and determined." He says, "Oh, I'm going to eventually." She says, "No, you're not. It's always going to be that way if you don't take action. Do you want to do it now?" He said, "Is it too late?" He meant literally in the day. He said, "It's already light outside." They were texting overnight. He said, "I'll text you tomorrow." She said, "No, it's probably the best time now because everyone's sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck. And no one's really out right now because it's an awkward time." She says, "If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. You just need to do it." He said, "Okay, I'm going to do it today." She said, "Do you promise?" He said, "I promise, babe." She said, "And you can't break a promise. Just go in a quiet parking lot or something."
I've changed to 20 years now after hearing that exchange. That's
despicable. Isn't that sinister?
It really is.
I've been back and forth like that, too. You know, literally, as I've been following the story, I think, oh, come on. Putting her in jail for 20 years doesn't fix anything, but that is so evil.
But you've got to make a statement out there, and maybe, unfortunately, she's now the poster child for texting someone that's disturbed.
Let's talk to Bill. You're on WGN. Bill, what did you want to say? Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just, after hearing that, yeah, that she definitely screwed up. But, you know, I want to say, too, you could probably get a whole line of people who have a part in this. I mean, his parents, his friends. I mean, and I'm sure at some point she just got tired. She thought he was maybe, perhaps, I'm guessing, she thought perhaps he's wanting attention, and maybe she got tired of it, which still does not absolve her of any cause. But there was a lot of people had to be involved in this. I mean, did he ever see a therapist? The friends, the relatives that could have also done something, and by their inaction, perhaps they were a cause of it too. She had a greater responsibility. Understand that was a terrible thing to do, but there were other people that has some part in this also.
Bill, I'm really glad you expressed it. Thanks, it's well put. I always thought, and I don't know, maybe I need to do a reset on this, but we don't blame the survivors of someone else's suicide. It ultimately is on them. It's a mental health issue. Now, maybe this is a kid teetering on the brink and she pushed him, and so she'll have to bear some responsibility. She wasn't found guilty of murder, but I've always felt that it's unfair to judge the bully or the friend who wasn't kind enough, or in this case, the friend who was awful. I've always felt that was unfair. Of course, we've never seen a case like this. This is unusual.
Candidly, I think we're going to see more of these in the future. This is it's not if it's going to happen again, it's when it's going to happen. And that's the sad part, because of texting, Instagram, Facebook, you name it, people are communicating.
John, I heard earlier today that both of those kids had mental health issues, that both were frail to the point of institutionalization. Yeah, we mentioned that a moment ago. John, how would you feel if that was your son? I think you would agree with the judge in this case. I probably would. I don't think that makes me the best arbiter of what the right way to handle this is if I'm the grieving parent, but I get your point. Nope, sorry, personal responsibility, says this person. It's on him. This texter says, words don't kill, weakness does. I don't judge the strength of a person who kills themselves, they're ravaged. This says, John, that guy is the epitome of misled America. It is pretty sad. And finally, Prudence, jump in here. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm a retired elementary school social worker, and you see so many of these troubled children, and I wonder if the attorney thinks the judge will take her mental status into effect, you know, into account rather when he sentences the number of years, because mental health was the hardest thing to convince parents and family members to get for their children.
Yeah, that's a really good question. A short answer to that.
Short answer is yes. The judge most likely will take it into account if it is realistic or if it's just some cop-out defense.
Jeff Kroll's with Salvi Shostak Pritchard. Nice to meet you in person.
Nice
Thanks for
you.
Coming into
Thanks
the
for
studio.
Having me, John.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well, I'm trying.
Here's John Williams.
And by that, I mean, I know. I'm trying. It's 2:10. This is John. Thanks for listening. We're here until 3 o'clock. Remember that. In the next half hour, our Bright Side gives you a chance to call in. Tell us some good news in your world. The Bright Side's a sort of group hug. It's a smile on the radio. Works every single time. The Bright Side comes your way in about a half an hour. More information about Teddy Roosevelt tickets, I want you to come and see. Boy, you talk about a bright side. There is that. Before we go to our guests, give me 35 seconds to just make this comment. We'll come back to it later on. This business about people robbing people on Lower Wacker Drive at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, three separate times now, people have come up and robbed people on LWD.
And I brought this up yesterday, right, with the guy who fired his gun. Yeah. I didn't realize yesterday, and I apologize for that, that it was on Lower Wacker. Not that it would make a big difference, but it's pretty scary.
But here's my point, that I think they need to do a better job of policing Lower Wacker Drive. It's one of the great innovations of the city. They spent a lot of money about 10 years ago fixing that thing up. It's a great throughway, but people live down there in cardboard huts. And it's not only sad and tragic, but it's dangerous. It's dangerous for them, and now it's dangerous for the people who stop at the few stoplights down there and then get robbed. It's bizarre. Clean them out. Clean them out. Get a truck, grab their stuff, put them and the stuff on the truck, and get it out of there. And if they don't want to get on the truck, clean them out. Get them out of there. Please, tomorrow. How hard is that? I take that
Where
thing,
do you want them to go?
That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about making that road safe for them and for people. That is not a hotel. Clean it out. All right, new subject. Yesterday, about this time, we were talking about the fact that Illinois has so mismanaged its funds it doesn't have a budget for two, some say 3 years, depending on how you do the counting on that. And as a result, the Department of Transportation says, starting the 1st of July, they're not sure they're going to do any more construction work. And it looks like you will not longer be able to buy lottery tickets, Powerball or Mega Millions in Illinois, because it's not guaranteed that they'll have the money to pay. Not only is that embarrassing, but it's angering. We put Lou Lang on, the state representative from the state lawmaker from Skokie. He's a Democrat, and he said a lot of this is the governor's fault and the Republican's fault. I thought we should ask a Republican to join us today, and so we did. Patty Bellick is a representative, a Republican from the 47th District. She's from Westmont, and she joins us now on WGN Radio. Hi, Patty. It's John Williams. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. And Elmhurst is in my district, so thanks for mentioning them.
Sorry that I'm not better student of where exactly Elmhurst is.
Representative, it's 82 right now in Elmhurst.
Thank you very much, Steve. No one asked. So where exactly does one find Elmhurst, Patty? Has been hiding from me all these years.
It's about 20 miles just west of downtown Chicago.
Do you think that the Department of Transportation is actually going to stop work on roads at the first of the month because they don't have enough money or guaranteed that they'll be able to pay their vendors?
I think that that could be a possibility, John, because they've said that they would have to halt 700 projects worth $2.3 billion, and an estimated 20,000 workers would be affected. So I think we've had this once or twice before when we've had budget issues, and I don't think they're just saying that. I think they're probably intending on doing that, because if they don't have the money to pay their vendors, then they're not going to go out on a limb.
But we've been to this sort of roadblock, no pun intended, before, and And then they find the money or they find the way. What's your guess do you think is going to happen?
I don't think that's going to happen this time, John, because this is much worse than it's ever been. Because you have a $6 billion deficit right now, plus $14 billion of unpaid bills. So it's to the point where it's on the brink of disaster, especially after June 30th. It's not just about the Powerball and the Mega Million. Hello?
Yeah, you're still on.
Oh, okay. It's not just about those issues. It's about the other issues with Standard & Poor's and Moody's, whether they're going to downgrade us to junk bond status after July 1st if we don't have a budget. So this is far worse than anything we've experienced before. My hope is that we will end this partisan impasse and come up with a bipartisan compromise when we go down there. The governor now has issued a special session. I'm sure you've seen that for the next 10 days, starting the middle of next week. And I think he's trying to bring about a compromise between both sides of the aisle.
Okay. I'm just so discouraged. I like Lou Lang, and he seems to be a knowledgeable guy to me. He's come on my show many times, but he was unequivocal about it. This is the governor's fault. He said the House and Senate have given him budgets, but he won't pass them, and that this is the Republicans' intractability. And I'm sure you're about to tell me the exact opposite. So I'm pre-exasperated.
Well, I'd like to give you just some facts, because Lou Lang is a friend of mine also, and I consider most of the people on the other side of the aisle friends. But when you get to the facts, you can look at the point that, I mean, this governor has been in for, what, quite 2 years or a little over that. When you look at the list of the budgets, and by the way, the Democrat, my friends on the other side of the aisle, have not put forth a budget. They are the only caucus that hasn't. Republican senators have, Democratic senators have, and recently this last week, the House Republicans did. So that has not been put forth. But take a look at the last couple of years. We're over 700 days without a budget. And in that time period, the 15 budget was out of control in the spending, and that never worked out, because then we had to come back right after the governor came in and fix that budget, put more money into it. So then the 16 budget was close to, I think, $7 billion over. Maybe it was the 16 budget was $4 billion over, and then the 17 budget was $7 billion out of balance. Even the Senate Democrats killed that bill. They would not vote on it. That was a bill that was brought forth by the other side of the aisle. So you're looking at the last couple of years where it has been total fiscal instability, overspending, overtaxing, and we need to come together. So I'm just giving some of the facts here. I will say that the governor was elected by not just Republicans, by Democrats and independents, but what he was elected on was to try to bring, you know, not the status quo in Illinois any longer. He wanted reforms. And that's what other people had faith in him doing, and that's why he has tried to bring about those reforms. And I'll tell you, workers' comp is one of the bills that is the most important bill that would help us grow the economy, because it will bring back jobs to Illinois. That has not been settled. The bill that was brought forward, that was not voted on by us, because all business groups in Illinois were opposed to the bill that was presented.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the statistics here, which I'm showing you, you see where we are. And that's a difficult thing to bring forward. I mean, we're all tired of the inflammatory rhetoric. We're all tired of the status quo. And looking forward to next week, I'm hoping that both sides of the aisle will really try, because I think the entire stability of the fiscal footing of the state of Illinois is on the line right now within the next 2 weeks.
Well, if you can't get the lottery to take your money, you have screwed up. I mean, think about that. That's people just saying, hey, can I give you some money with no hope of ever getting any of it back? And even they don't want money from people in Illinois. We have so screwed it up. I just think it's the most obvious red flag that a state can ever put up. The challenge, I think, for the governor is that even if he's right or principled, this is on him, too. You can say that it's the Democrats' fault all day long, but it's a process. And if the governor doesn't get his way, I guess he can say, I'm not going to sign it. But guess what? We all suffer because of his intractability, too.
Absolutely. And I'm not putting this all on one party. I'm just showing you the financials, you know, about the budgets of the last several years and what's led to part of the financial problems.
Well, what's the biggest state? Thing? What if there was one thing that, or maybe two, Patty, but what are you guys fighting the most over?
I think that the governor, and he has looked at the budget that was drawn up the other day. He has said he would support that budget. He'll, I'm sure, have to look at, you know, that's a draft. You have to go with it. I mean, it's not really a draft, so it'll be out there. But you put something out there to bring everybody together to compromise. I will tell you that the Senate, Republicans and Democrats worked very hard together, very much in sync, and their grand bargain was a very, very good draft that we put together this week to try to work off of that so we could start where we had compromised with the Democrats and Republicans. We're not looking to put any more divides between us. I would say if the governor, we would show that not only the budgets, but the reforms that we've done. We have done a consolidation bill passed by everybody. We have done a procurement bill reforms passed by everybody. If we could do a workers' comp bill, that's another major reform that the governor has promised over and over again to achieve in his administration. And that would be helpful to everyone. If we could find something in that bill that would make the worker, the business community in Illinois agree to, that would be a major reform that I think would move this stalemate forward.
A couple quick questions for you from a couple of our listeners. Is that all right, Patty?
Sure.
Patrick, you're on WGN Radio. What do you want to say? Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to find out, and from all your other political guests, what personally is she going to do starting actually today or tomorrow to help end this budget crisis? Instead of talking about like, oh, this is the budget that they presented or this, like, what is she going to sit down at her desk or computer or have a meeting with people to do to help end this?
Absolutely, and I would love to answer that because I work very well with Representative Greg Harris, who is the Democratic chairman of the Human Service Committee, and I'm the minority chair. I worked with him 2 weeks ago. I gave him a list, and he was very responsive to sitting down and going over it, a list of the things that we thought coming from the grand bargain from the Senate and Democrats over in the from the Senate Republicans and Democrats that we could look to put into this compromise budget and work from there. And he said he thought that was very helpful. So I'm a budgeteer. I'm heavy into trying to get this done. Now, I don't want to blame things on one person or another. I'll give the financial background of where we are, but I am for moving forward and getting this impasse settled and coming up with a compromise. What all of us want is a comprehensive balanced budget. And I think that by looking over what they were very close in agreeing to 2 months ago, we can move forward. And that's what we tried to do with the bill that we put forward 2 days ago. And that would be my answer to you, that I'm strongly committed to not leaving Springfield till we have a budget that's agreed upon.
Thanks, Patrick. I got time for one quick call. Give me a short answer, too, if you can, Representative. Rob, you're on the air. You're on WGN. Hi.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you a question. Where's that money from the slush fund for the road construction work that the governor took out and put it to the general fund that us Local 150 operators helped get a bill passed for the road fuel tax to go in for the road construction that he robbed? When's that money going to come back to us? Why did we have to pass another law to get to save money and put into a lockbox referendum or amendment that just passed now? Where's that money come from?
I didn't quite hear the first part of the question, but I think you were asking about the money from the motor fuel tax and the money into the lockbox. The money into the lockbox was very heavily supported by everybody in the state of Illinois, that they wanted to make sure that there was money set aside for the roads in Illinois for construction. And that's why this decision not to go forward with that would be extremely detrimental to the state of Illinois, because the infrastructure, again, is one of the major issues that when businesses are looking to come to Illinois, they want to make sure not only about your taxes, but they want to make sure your infrastructure.
Well, does that money exist? Is that money in a fund somewhere?
Well, they set up a lockbox fund so that I'm pretty sure it's the motor fuel tax that would go into that to be, because when I first came into the General Assembly, that was definite that nobody was ever to take the motor fuel tax for anything else except for construction of roads. And then it was starting over the years, not just in this administration, it was starting to be used you know, if there was a deficit as one time, you know, funding for budgets and things like that.
Right.
There were lots of funds that were swept.
Boy, how many times have we done that? How many times have we done something like that in this state? All right, Patty, we're out of time. Go back to work, get back to your computer, go back to more meetings. We'll see what happens with the special session. I'll come out and visit you in lovely Elmhurst sometime too, all right?
Yes. Well, my office is in Westmont, but we'd love to have you either place.
I'll probably be at the wrong door, but yeah, thank you for your time and your thoughts. Now go to work. Our president has tweeted again, which is weird because it's not 5 in the morning. Actually, this was 4 hours ago. So we'll make it, see, it's 3:30 on the East Coast. So maybe before a light lunch, the president today tweeted, "Great news, !! Hashtag MAGA. And then there's a picture of him with the American flag behind him. And it says in a blue box inset, "Rasmussen reports 50%. Rasmussen says that his approval rating is now 50%. Which is, boy, higher than some of the other ones that you've been seeing. So once again, find the one you like. Some of them have them at 39. This one, the president touts, has it at 50%. And then below that, the more famous one, "I'm being investigated for firing the FBI director by the man who told me to fire the FBI director, witch hunt." Steve, I didn't mean to cut you off when we were talking about the traffic on Lower Wacker Drive and the fact that when people stop at lights, what is it, 3 times in a row now? People have been robbed down there. I said that they need to clear those people out. And you said, "Where are we going to put them?" And I said, "I don't care," or "I don't know."
Yeah, you didn't cut me off.
Well, I'm not wrong about my attitude about that, am I?
I don't know. I mean, I don't drive down there. You obviously drive down there a lot more. I haven't had a problem with running into pedestrians, but, I mean, it seems like they need to have somewhere to go.
If you go down to the Riverwalk, when you go down the steps here right after the Michigan Avenue Bridge, to the left, you're now looking to your left, you would see Lower Wacker Drive. There's a wall there, but not all the way. So you can actually see onto Lower Wacker Drive as you go down the stairs. And right there is a little tent city.
You know what? I've noticed there's a tent city just directly north of this building. On, what is it, Grand or Illinois, whatever street that is right there.
Yeah, sure.
The one way, right across the street from Tribune Tower, down below.
But down below.
There are oftener people camped
out
now.
Oh, yeah, now that you mentioned, I have seen that.
It seems like there are more people camping out now than there have been.
That is happening more often now, and I don't, you know, my initial reaction to it, what you've been hearing lately is that I'm uncomfortable with it. My discomfort with it is probably nothing compared to the discomfort for those people living that life. I get it. But I'm saying that tourists and citizens and businessmen and women are using these streets and using these sidewalks. And when you have to now walk through a little squatter site on a sidewalk above or below the main streets in Chicago, I think that's a problem twofold. One is the people living under those circumstances, and the other one is the people trying to live around those circumstances. And I know how to fix the second problem. You get those people the hell out of there, and then let's find some accommodation for them. At least that can fix the second problem. But I'm not sure that just because I don't have a solution to the first, we shouldn't at least address the second. I'm flabbergasted that anywhere you want to put up a North Face tent, you can put up a tent like you're camping in some campsite and you live there now. And, oh, by the way, that's a sidewalk or that's an underpass off of Lakeshore Drive, or it's over here on Lower Wacker Drive where we've spent millions of dollars to attract and encourage people to go to. I mean, and it is a gem of the city. It's a great urban park. And adjacent to it on a half wall is a little tent city, little pop-up tent area over there. And now people are, I'm not sure if it's the same population, but I think you could kill two birds with one stone if you just cleaned people and debris out of that area. Father's Day's kind of snuck up on me this year.
Yeah, it's coming up. I think it's this Sunday.
Well, you and I are both fathers. I'm sorry, Steve, are you still is your father still alive?
Yes, he is.
And so do you still, but you also have, you're a father yourself.
I happen to be a father.
Of children who could do nice things for you now.
Yeah, right.
So is it more you have to do something for your dad, or do your kids more do stuff for you? Who are you, where are you in that?
I think I'm in a pretty lucky family that we pretty much don't do anything for anyone. I'll call my dad, and but we don't have a lot of high maintenance members of the family, so.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. My daughter's in Vegas.
No kidding, really.
Yeah.
That's her idea of, hey, Dad, listen, here's the best Father's Day gift I can give you. I'll get out of your hair. I'll go to Vegas.
I was talking to Bennett, a producer, about, you know, when the kids were younger, that's how parents would reward each other on Mother's Day and Father's Day.
Yeah.
They'd get take them away.
Well, I think that's more a Mother's Day tradition than a Father's Day.
Yeah.
You know, give Mom a break. We'll all go to the Cubs game.
I can remember years like, I just want to mow the lawn. You know, take care of the kids. I'll go mow the lawn somewhere. Or
yeah, I'm with
someone else's
that.
Lawn. I'll just go mow a lawn.
My dad's got some steaks he's been saving in the freezer. And he doesn't always have steaks for as many people that are coming over.
Right.
So he's not been whipping out the good famous steaks that we've all been hearing about. But I think I found a way to finagle my way into the good steaks because I said to my one son, Griff, let's go see Nani and Pop on Wednesday. It'll be the two of them and the two of us. And I think that these famous steaks, it's a four-pack.
Four is good.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to celebrate Father's Day with my dad on Wednesday, and we'll do something for me on the weekend. Teddy Roosevelt would be a great Father's Day thing. Tell Dad for Father's Day, hey, Dad, you know how you like to listen to WGN, and you love that John Williams guy. I mean, you're always yelling at the radio when John Williams is on, but he talks to Teddy Roosevelt on stage. It's unlike anything you've ever seen before, and we got you some tickets for TR, Dad. I'll tell you what. I happen to know this. Dads love this show. Moms will, too, because he's just so funny and irascible. He really is a character. He's a hoot. He may be the most brilliant. I don't know. Everybody puts Jefferson and Kennedy on the top of those lists, but he was, well, in fact, one of our most literate presidents, besides being a swashbuckler, Teddy Roosevelt. He likes to talk about what a writer he was. He likes to talk about himself, period.
The youngest president ever in the history of this country, 42, and I left office at 50, the youngest former president.
Author of 35 books?
At least 35, depending on how you count. I wrote more than 35 books, several of them American classics. And let me just say, the next writingest president of American history, who would that be? John Quincy Adams. He wrote 12 books, all unreadable.
You were a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
We settled the Russo-Japanese War, and because of that, I became the first American to win the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm often seen as a warmonger. And by the way, I do like war. But I was a man of peace as president.
That's Teddy Roosevelt. Sometimes he comes out as a rough rider, sort of like in cowboy gear, swashbuckling kind of stuff. Swashbuckling's not the right phrase, but you know, sort of like a cowboy. Or like a guy who would be charging up San Juan Hill in combat. Other times he comes out dressed more like in a tuxedo with a top hat. Imagine like a little Monopoly man. It'll be one of those versions. I'll ask him questions, you will too. How do you get tickets to the August 12th show? Call 847-963-8252 right now. 847-963-8252 or at the College of DuPage. To find out more or to buy tickets online, it's just as easy to do them that way. Just go to WGNradio.com/events. The show's August 12th. Hey, it's Friday. Ro and Anna about ready to come in here and start your weekend. We lean into the weekend with something called The Bright Side. Call me right now, 312-981-7200, or text to 312-981-7200. Give me your good news. All right, we're ready to do The Bright Side? Boy, I've got to really work on that phone number. That's my second project today. But you're right, Steve. The glass...
Some things in life are bad.
Maybe half full
they
now.
They can really make you mad.
Call me.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
My phone number's 312.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
981.
Grumble. Give a whistle.
You know, 7200.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
All together now.
Aye.
Sing. Always.
Always look on the bright side of life.
A whistle. What's some good news? Violetta's actually always snapping her fingers in Traffic Central. Hey, Violetta, are you listening to WGN Radio?
What's that?
What's your bright
just
side?
Just kidding,
Give us some good news. Tell us why you're smiling.
Well, last week I told you that my patio set came in.
Yeah.
And for a week we've been avoiding the boxes at my household. And then my mom finally put it together, so it's up and I can go enjoy a glass of wine tonight.
That's the thing. Hey, oh,
How about you, Steve Bertrand? What's some good news in your world?
My bright side is my kids would put the chairs together on their own, not wait for their mom.
We do not judge. There's only one rule. We do not judge other people's happiness.
She wanted to do it.
If she wanted, that's a double whammy. Everybody wins.
I so violated the rules here. I'm sorry. I have, you know, it's Father's Day coming up, really. I have two almost completely adult children. And I'm just the luckiest guy in the world. Two great kids.
I'm happy for my dad and me, too. I'm lucky guy. Lucky guys we are. Here we go. Hey, Paula, this is John. What's your bright side? Why are you smiling, Paula? Oh, hold on a second. I need to actually, boy, am I doing a good job today.
You are terrific, and you're a great addition back to Chicago radio land. I'm thankful for successful surgery last week, and four wonderful children and two wonderful great twin grandchildren.
Wow, you are blessed, aren't you?
I am truly blessed, and I am looking forward to an active summer, and I want to thank you so much. And this is on the eve of the Jewish Sabbath, and I say to all, Shabbat Shalom. Just
purse your lips and thanks for the call. Let's go from there to Kathy. Hey, Kathy. It's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. This is Kathy, and yesterday I celebrated 13 years of sobriety.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Congratulations, Kathy.
Do you remember me? I've been calling you every year.
I was just going to say, I know somebody who calls us every year on their anniversary of sobriety. Kathy, well done.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, I'll talk to you next year, if not sooner, okay?
God willing. Okay, bye-bye. So
always look on the bright. Hey, Pat, this is John. What's your bright side?
Bright side is school's out and I can listen to you. And secondly, last week I was privileged to see the product of 13, 14 years of education as 400 students walked across my high school stage, and God bless them all.
Well put, Pat. Thanks for the phone call. How about you? Bill, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Oh, my bright side, John, comes from Kankakee, and a local theater group had the courage to do a production of Spamalot, and I went to go see it, and it was wonderful, and I realized, oh my goodness, that's where the song comes from.
And depending on which version you get, you may need to edit it. I presume they did the PG-13 version of this song?
I think they let it all hang out. It was kind of a racy show, which people enjoyed.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, if you play this for your church or grade school group, make sure that if you play this song, you preview it. That's all I'll say, because what you're hearing here is slightly edited. Hey, Jan, this is John. Why are you smiling, Jan?
After 10 years of serving as a United States Air Force firefighter, my beautiful daughter, as of Friday, is now a civilian.
How about that? Congrats both ways.
Thanks for the call.
Always. Hey, Ryan, it's John. Why are you smiling, sir?
We finally got some rain in Rock Falls, Illinois.
We got a little. Boy, we all needed it, too. Thanks for the call. Glad you reminded us of that good news. Hey, Nina, it's John. What's your bright side?
My bright side is that my son is engaged to a wonderful young woman that we love, and we are thrilled to be getting a daughter-in-law.
Thanks for the call. Hey, Sandy, it's John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
My daughter, who's 40, has gone through 6 months of chemo with breast cancer and surgery, and she is chemo-free, and today is her 15th wedding anniversary.
For life is quite absurd. Thank you for the call. What great news. Hey, Carrie, it's John. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. My bright side is that we're going to go see Blues on the Fox at the River's Edge Park tomorrow. Should be a great day in the sunshine. So
always look on the... Talk to me, Stephen. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
John, I retired from the Army this week after 23 years in and moved back to Montgomery.
Thank you for your service, Stephen. Enjoy your retirement.
Thanks, sir. Always
look on the lights. Hey, Catalina, this is John. Why are you smiling today?
My mom came to visit us from Ecuador for a whole month.
Wow. Well, what a journey. I'm glad that you guys had some time together.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Susan, it's John. Why are you smiling?
Hi, John. My brother Tommy had 5 feet of his intestines removed, not 5 inches, but 5 feet, and he's doing well.
Wow. Boy, oh boy. Thanks for the call. We live in amazing times. It's amazing what they can do. Let's go to Pam. Hey, Pam, this is John. Why are you smiling?
Hey, John. This is Pam from Belvedere. On Wednesday, in that storm, a big tree in my barnyard drive fell on my truck, and we got my truck out today, and the truck is hurt. My dog, my cat, my barn, or me were not hurt. I'm so grateful. And next to
love and smile and dance and sing. On Fridays, we do something called The Bright Side. You call in, tell us some good news in your world while you're smiling, and we will smile with you. Thanks for letting me be on News or Ruse yesterday.
Oh, it was really fun. And, you know, I like the fact that Judy, just right now before we got started, she's like...
talking smack?
She's talking smack.
It was my bright side. What? John lost.
Yeah, but you lost too.
Whatever. He lost first.
Is that the spirit of the bright side, to be happy about someone else's
failure?
No,
it's just the spirit of the game.
Schadenfreude.
Spirit of Judy.
Schadenfreude,
is
yeah.
That is.
Yeah. Judy Schadenfreude. That's going to be our new new news anchor.
Judy thinks that's a beer.
Oh, no. It's a way of life, I think, for Judy. But Violetta, I told you going into it, John, that Violetta is sneaky.
Oh, my gosh.
She's sneaky. She's like this, like, she comes from behind. You don't know, you have no clue that she's about to, like, basically, you know.
Acts like she's not paying attention, then boom.
Shiv, boom.
You guys do this true false news game, and I'm like, I'm going to kill on that because I do a news show, too. I will know these things.
I'm a talk show host. Yep.
I'm a talk show host.
I know some stuff.
No big deal.
I know a few things. I didn't know any of them.
Yeah. Well,
you had a good run.
Yeah, you had a good run, John. You got to just get...
I gave the wrong phone number for 3 hours today, I know?
It's okay.
I was the Bennetts, I'd be saying cash only. Right this way. I'll give you a ticket.
Touche.
See? I told you. She's always thinking.
What are you guys doing?
All right. Well, we'll talk about the president's Twitter storm. Susan Schmidt will be here. She's actually in Chicago today. She's based in Dallas, but she's traveling across the country. And she'll be here to talk about the Whole Foods, which is also a Texas-based company. Whole Foods being bought by Amazon.
Yeah.
That is a fascinating business development.
It is.
And what does the Cuba situation mean for, like, Illinois farmers and people who've been trying to do deals there? Mm-hmm. And the president made a very tough speech in Havana today, in Miami today, Little Havana. What's really happening there is different than what he said.
Well, here's what's
shocked to hear.
Do you know the answer to this question? Has what he said today curtailed my opportunity to go on vacation in Cuba?
No.
Okay, then I'm in. Whatever he said, I'm fine.
The embassy stays.
You'll be able to go. You have to go person to person. There are certain hotels you can stay in, certain hotels you cannot. And interestingly enough, one of the hotel chains you cannot, because it is being developed by Raul Castro's son-in-law, who's also a generalissimo in the army there. So they've cut them off. But there are also the Starwood Hotel there, which, interestingly enough, is a major competitor of the Trump brand.
Yes, Will.
But he's saying that one's allowed to stay. He says he wasn't going to mess with that one, that deal.
Well, yeah, but Americans can't go to it. That's the military one.
That's the military one?
Yeah, Starwood one. Yeah.
Mm. You guys have been there, huh? Have you been to Cuba?
I haven't been there.
I want to go. I want to go before it gets all Disneyed up.
Well, I want to tell you something about that I've heard from this. I know a number of people have gone, and I always hear about what happens with the food, which I love Cuban food, like in South Florida. Love it. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get a great Cuban meal up here, but there are a few places. And at least somebody gets majorly sick on a trip going down there.
Oh.
Interesting problem.
I
haven't quite figured that part out.
Well, if you took a bunch of listeners, Ro, I'd place bets on...
I'd be the one getting sick.
That's the way it works, We've seen that already.
Certainly the way it worked in the past tense, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm. All right. Leaving the studio.